This is an adult podcast made for adults by adults. Welcome to Fake Film Fans. Swain's sick again, and I can't exactly tell if that's on me or on him that I haven't been sick, and he's been sick like 3 times since we started this podcast. Also, the conversation about Megan today was pretty fun too. A weird one though, because we both thought this film was really straightforward, but we completely picked up 2 different things. That was pretty entertaining. So all that's coming up right after we listen to some Posture.
Welcome to Fake Film Fans, a movie podcast for thoughtful degenerates. I'm Suede Best, and I torture monkeys.
It's Suede Best here. Won't tell your show ugly Christmas. I love Christmas.
You want to start it off on this tenor? You're going to start it off with this tenor?
This is what I'm going to be doing.
You're just going to be mean to me?
No, not mean to you. I just want to like think of new ways of how to imitate you.
Okay, well, so what's your name? Because it's not Suede, because I'm Suede. You need to say your name.
All right, Bob.
All right, Bob. I'm going to call you Bob for the rest of the episode.
It's Tun Long. What was that fucking name that you gave me beforehand? Wufong. Wufong. My name is Wufong. Wong Fu. All
right, Bob.
Oh shit, my fucking Bob threw you off too much.
It did. It's because it's not funny. God damn it, I feel like horse shit. Well, I just feel bad. I've got a cold. Can you hear it in my voice?
Oh, what happened to your NyQuil?
No NyQuil. I have shit to do. I've been taking Mucinex.
What is this fucking American drug you just referenced? You might as well just said you've been taking heroin, man. God damn, you fucking Americans.
I've been doing speedballs.
Speedballs?
Speedballs. I've been freebasing opioids.
Have you ever felt good while you're sick without medicine?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You know how when you do runner's high and you're like, pa, 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 it feels good because your body hurts so much, so you're high on copium, right? You can feel that.
Yeah,
for sickness,
exactly.
Like your whole body's in pain, that your body gives you dopamine so you feel high.
So post-vomiting, that is a great feeling. Right after you've just vomited everything up, you can crawl back into bed and you're a little sweaty and you're shivering and you can just fall right back asleep. That's not a terrible feeling. I don't know if this counts, but the feeling of being taken care of, like when you're little and you're really sick and someone puts like a cold washcloth on your forehead or whatever, that's nice.
I've never had that happen to me.
No one took care of you when you were sick?
No one's ever given me a cold wash towel on my head.
What did they do for you when you got sick?
I mean, to be honest, sometimes I got scolded that I was sick and couldn't go to school. But usually I got like a nice... Yeah, Swade just used his blanket that he fucking cares so much about to blow his nose.
Nope, it's a t-shirt.
Oh, it's a t-shirt.
Dude, it's real fucking filth hours. I'm gonna do laundry today, so I'm gonna just do a fucking bunch of laundry.
This is why I didn't like it when you fucking wore my shirts, man. I don't know. You might have used my shirts to wipe your ass. I'm so fucking glad I threw them all away.
I just have these old ass shirts that I like only wear when I'm asleep. Fucking, I'll wash it. It's fine. Cut this bit out. Cut this
Why,
bit
is that
out.
Embarrassing?
No, it's not embarrassing, but I've like sent the podcast to 2 different human beings I've been talking to on Tinder. I'm realizing now that there's like a lot of bits in this podcast where I sound cool and smart. There are also a lot of bits where I sound like a completely insane fucking muskrat fucking freak of nature. I was listening to this bit where we're talking about how I can't drive on the highway and I live with my parents, and I was like, oh shit, that's not gonna help me get late, you know, like that kind of shit.
To be honest, I always feel like vulnerabilities help you become the nice guy. Nice guys,
the
baby!
Nice guy. We need to focus.
Okay,
we need
sorry.
To focus.
All right. Oh, I got a transition here. I got a transition. Speaking of boogers, let's talk about the food you want to eat at a movie theater.
Oh my god, Walter, if you start talking about eating boogers at the movie theater, I swear to god, I'm gonna get on a flight to Hong Kong and I'm gonna goddamn stab you.
It was
you
a good transition though.
Fucking,
you made it,
I swear,
right?
Yeah. It was a good transition.
Like green Skittles, green boogers, green Skittles.
I have an erection right now. I have a giant throbbing erection because of how good that transition
is. That what happens when transitions are good for you?
That's what happens when it's a very good transition. I have a huge boner for you. and your transition skills.
I never realized.
Okay, I don't remember even how this came up, but we were talking about one of the best non-movie theater snacks for going to see a movie, right?
I guess you can make up a story.
Oh my god! Fucking... Okay, this is what we came up with the opener. How about that? Fucking ripping off the kimono. Fucking... You're a shogunate just fucking, like, walking through...
Okay, no.
Japan,
I'm gonna help you.
And you just wait, see our opener,
right,
and you just
redo,
pull
redo,
your kimono
redo,
off.
Redo. What are our redo bits? Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, Walter and I were just sort of talking about, like, how we were gonna, like, maybe, like, what food would you bring to a movie theater that's, like, not a movie theater food?
Oh, yeah, and we were in, like, the blazing sunset of the Midwest, and then we were both like, bro, would this be a sick film? And we looked at each other, and our eyes connected, and we almost smooched, but we didn't. And realized what we wanted to talk about
right.
on the next opener was what
That's
movie
That's
snacks
exactly
that don't belong in movie theaters will we eat for a specific film.
And then we went back to our wives, and a year later we met again, and we could feel our lust, our homoerotic lust for each other, but we could do nothing about it except slap each other on the back and say, you bitch!
You bitch!
You bitch!
And that's a Brokeback Mountain reference for everyone who doesn't understand what we're
talking
about.
You don't have to watch it. Just read it. It's very good. Annie Prulow. Fantastic. Pulitzer Prize winner, if I remember correctly, because this is a book cast.
I don't think they say you bitch in the film. And also, I don't want to shit on the film because the director is Ang Lee, our classic Taiwan slash, actually I don't even remember he's from Taiwan or Hong Kong. Anyways, it's important for the Asian American experience, but I hate the film too. No, but you put in a contradiction with the story now, because now we're in the future. So how are we here with the idea if our idea only came from a year in the future with our wives? We need time traveling to make this consistent.
Because I can see the future. I have taken so much Mucinex that I can see the future. I am free of drainage and I can see the future. I'm fucked up on Mucinex,
baby. I like this. This is an unplanned opener that Slade had an epiphany. A euphoria. I don't know what to call. What are those fucking things called when the women get the... Okay, that was gonna be really bad.
No, say it, baby. Say it.
You know that theory how, like, a lot of nuns would get enlightenment from God and they would see God? And their theory is, actually, they were just having an orgasm. Have you heard of this theory?
No, I've never heard of this. I mean, I guess I could see it. A vision, enlightenment, an epiphany, something like that. But see, I feel like if you look at the devils, right, that's the opposite. When they have orgasms, they're like, oh shit, it's Satan.
But if someone didn't understand what an orgasm was at all.
Yeah, if they'd never had one and they have like a wet dream. So what movie snack would I bring to my favorite movie, Hellraiser 2? It would be a nun having an orgasm and not knowing that it was an orgasm, so she thinks it's God. And I would put that in my jacket, and I would sit in the theater, and I would eat that when the lights went down. What do you think of that?
I think it's pretty good. I'm surprised you brought a movie that we already talked about.
Oh, that's true.
Two, is this nun alive?
Yeah, she's alive. She's very small. I shrank her down with my shrink ray, and I put her in a tiny jar, and I put her in my jacket.
Do you need seasoning on that?
The orgasm that she has that she thinks is God is the seasoning.
I still don't understand why this is a good movie snack.
Because I can see God. I drink her blood and I see God while I watch Hellraiser.
So you need to see God to enjoy Hellraiser 2.
Yes.
Okay. The real problem is my movie is actually new to the fucking podcast, and then I will actually have to talk about my movie.
I have one that's new to the podcast after my first
idea. I thought
we
were picking one movie and doing three snacks.
That's what I did.
Then how do you have a new movie if you already picked Hellraiser 2?
Because that's just for the nun part.
Then that's not one movie for free snacks.
Oh yeah, I know, because that other stuff, that's the first one. I have a second one that's a second movie with three snacks.
Well, I wanted you to be excited because
I am excited. I am very excited.
Why are you putting this sarcastic energy right now?
I'm sick. I am excited. It's not sarcastic.
All right.
I'm fucked up on Mucinex. Fucked up. I'm sick. Well, put a cold towel on my head. Give me an orgasm and then I'll see God.
So I brought a film that was created by your god. It's Stephen King.
Oh, Stephen King. He is one of my gods. I don't read King anymore, which is not to say anything against Stephen King. I love his prose. I love his writing. But when I read it, it like leaks into my own writing in a really terrible way. All it takes is a chapter of a Stephen King book. And then like for the rest of the week, all I'll write is like bad Stephen King fan fiction. It just like leaks into my brain. The only time I read Stephen King is when I'm like not writing. And there's been very few times in my life that I've stopped writing. I need to take a break one day so I can sit back with, I want to read some of his new books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think this film has a lot of Stephen King prose in it. Do you know Stephen King's Sleepwalkers?
Is that the one with the cat monsters?
And also, it doesn't have a novel, right?
Yeah. This is when he, like, wrote and directed it. It's got, like, cat vampire monsters that, like, transform.
He didn't direct this film. But yeah, as you said, it's about nomadic shape-shifting vampires who can't deal with cats. That's their only weakness. It's a mom and her son, and they fuck each other. And then her awesome. Son goes out and tries to, like, seduce girls for his mom, because his mom is, like, weak. I think this is my favorite Stephen King film.
Really? You liked it more than, like, The Shining?
I don't like The Shining that much. Anyways, in the beginning of this movie, it starts out with a bunch of dead cats ripped apart, torn inside and out.
Skinned? Are they skinned?
I don't know what the difference between inside out and skinned is.
Skinned is where you take the fur off so you can access the meat. Inside out would be something, like, weird and fucked up.
I mean, skinned is pretty weird and fucked up to me, too.
Not if you're gonna eat the animal. They're not gonna take its skin off. Oh, they don't eat cats. They just hate cats.
No, cats literally are the only things that hurt them. They're perfect beings that can create invisibility and make themselves look like humans. But if a cat hurts them, they lose their power. So they're super scared of cats. But that's why my first fucking movie snack has to be your precious Lola cat. I will feast on her when I fucking watch this movie. Your fucking bitch ass of a cat.
She loves you.
She does not love me. Your cat loves nothing.
She loves you.
She loves nothing. She is the meanest fucking cat. I am mean. I'm a terrible human being. But that fucking cat is something else.
Yeah. You know what she used to do? She's gotten older now, so she doesn't do this as much. And we also don't have mice in the house right now. I don't know how we got rid of the mice. But when she catches a mouse, she'll, like, take them and put them in the bathtub so they can't get out. And then she'll just, like, torture them until they either die or she gets bored. Sometimes she'll just eat pieces of them and leave them alive. She's, like, a terrible, terrible creature. Because I've met tons of cats that, like, kill other animals. But I've never met a cat that dismembers an animal and leaves it to die.
Like, tortures.
It's so weird. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with that cat. Maybe it's because she got high when she was little. When I was in high school, I used to like smoke a lot of weed, and so I would sit in my room and hotbox my room, and then the cat would come hang out and like chill. So maybe all the weed turned her into a monster. I don't know.
Dude, that fucking cat. I have never seen a more mean hissing face.
She does
a monstrous fucking face. I will relish feasting in this fucking cat. I would chop this fucking Lola's head off.
That's so fucked up.
I am going to fucking eat the
bones. Dude, I love my cat Lola.
And I'm
going to
take that fucking meat raw, just like those fucking rats that she puts in the fucking toilet.
To feast on my cat. Well, now I want to change my sacks to be something that antagonizes you. I didn't think this was going to be a mean game. I thought this was going to be a fun game. I have been feeling sick and a little sad, so I was thinking about what ideally would want, and I think the movie I brought would be Flight of Dragons, made by the same people who made The Last Unicorn. It's a movie that's very near and dear to my heart. And my first snack would just be a hot bowl of gumbo. Rice, meat, soup stock, some onions, some garlic, maybe a carrot or two for some sweetness.
Swain has never had real gumbo.
Yes, I have.
Really?
Yeah. First of all, the gumbo me and my dad make is real gumbo. It just doesn't have okra.
No, it doesn't have roux.
What are you talking about? It does have roux. I make the roux myself.
The one with the batter? The flour?
Yeah. It takes me like fucking 2 hours.
The first time you cooked it for me, you didn't fucking put roux in it.
Yeah, because we were busy getting drunk. I didn't have time. But no, when I make gumbo, I cook the roux for like 2 hours.
That's fucking mean, man. You gave me fucking half-ass gumbo, which I loved. I thought it was really good.
Well, I'm sorry for that. I would want to come into the movie theater with like my big pot of soup and like a big warm blanket.
I agree. I think gumbo really fits well when you're sitting on a couch.
I don't think you could watch it with like a scary movie or a super intense intense movie, I think the vibes would clash. Because Gumbo is so comforting to me.
Well, for me, a lot of, like, for example, Sleepwalkers is technically a horror film, but it's a comfy horror
film. Yeah, I get that. For instance, you could watch Hellraiser while you eat Gumbo. But, like, Midsommar or, like...
You haven't seen any of these movies you're about to list.
I know, because they look scary. Then how would you know?
Maybe you watch Midsommar, you're like, what the fuck, man? This is a comedy that's making me, like, sad because it makes me think of the tsunamis that kill a bunch of people. All right. I'm very aware of messy snacks in the movie theater. And that's why popcorn is actually one of the worst movie theater snacks in the world, because it's so hard to clean.
I disagree. I think compared to some things, it's very easy to clean.
What? Like, people step on a piece of popcorn and just...
Yeah, but it can be swept up. Compare that to, like, a Slurpee. Like, that takes way more time. Are you kidding me? A popcorn is, like, mad easy to clean up.
What if your movie theater requires you to sweep all the corners?
I did that. What do you mean? I did that. It was super easy. You just get in the corners and you sweep. Or you do what I used to do and sweep all the popcorn down until you can sweep it under the black cloth where the screen is. And then so then there's just, like, an infinite amount of popcorn behind the black screen.
Dude, I think this might be your most controversial fucking take of all time. I think hot dogs and all that stuff are harder to clean, but I do not think anyone would think popcorn is easy to clean.
I just got so good at it, man. Maybe that's it.
Okay.
Maybe I'm like such a Chad at sweeping popcorn. Because I think I worked at the movie theater longer than you worked at your movie theater, right?
Okay. And what does that mean? That you're now so much better at me that it's easy?
Yeah. I'm glad you figured that one out, Walt. I'm proud of you for using your logic to figure out that I'm a Chad at sweeping up popcorn.
Okay. I don't think that's actually how things work, though.
What do you mean? You get better at stuff the more often you do it.
It doesn't make it easy, though. It just makes that you're better at it.
That means it's easy. Like how... What do you mean?
The standard easy doesn't change just because you're better at something than me. Is reading Bridge of Terabithia suddenly very easy because someone who can't... Okay, actually, fuck it. Okay, never mind. I think easy can be relative, I guess.
That's what I think. I think easy is relative.
I fucking hate language. It's literally the most useless fucking thing in the world.
You're just mad that language doesn't bend to your every insane whim. What's your second snack, you gremlin?
Apparently, it has to be popcorn now because it's so fucking easy to clean.
Yeah, but we said it wasn't gonna be from a movie theater.
So this film has a really good scene where the main girl, she's working in a movie theater, and then she gets introduced, she puts her earphones in and she starts dancing to this really cool punk song. And then the main vampire guy sneaks up behind her and she screams and then knocks over a bunch of popcorn. Have you ever thought it would be very interesting to taste music?
Yeah, dude, I think about that all the time.
Okay, that would be my fucking
movie. I love you so
much,
man. I love you bringing this to the podcast. I think it's genius. Because see, like when I listen to music, a lot of it's very narrative to me. Like when I listen to like power metal, I can like see the fucking armies clashing. And when I listen to like some sweet anime music, I can like see the ninjas. But like sometimes you listen to something and you're like, man, I bet this tastes great. Not everything. Like, I imagine a lot of Weezer music tastes like a candy bar that you loved as a child, but now when you eat it, it, like, doesn't taste as good as you remember, and you can't figure out if it's because you've grown or they've changed the recipe, but either way, it's, like, weird.
I think for most music that you feel like you could taste, a lot of people would gravitate to sweet or candy.
Well, and that's because of pop. Pop music is so candy central, right? I mean, there's, like, literal pop songs like, I want candy. Or like bubblegum pop is a genre, right? I'm thinking about like jazz, what jazz tastes like. But I don't think there's a food, but like pop rocks, but if pop rocks were like meat flavored. What song that you eat would you bring to this movie? Would it be that punk song? I feel like punk music probably tastes like chicken marrow. Chicken bone marrow? I don't know why, but that was my instant association.
It would taste like popcorn.
Yeah, but maybe like a little meatier and a little grosser.
Maybe, but her song made me feel like I would taste popcorn. I don't actually know why I called it punk, because it's not even close. It's literally just the contours. Do you love me? That song. Oh, she was very cute in that scene.
Okay, this is also kind of vague, but there are these glowing bugs in Flight of Dragons that make these terrible noises that drive people crazy. And there are like lots of movies where there are fireflies and glowing bugs and they just look like little lights. I don't want to eat a bug, necessarily. And I don't want to eat a lightning bug in particular. I don't think they would taste very good. They smell weird. I don't know if you've ever smelled a lightning bug, but they, like, don't smell appetizing. I want to eat the light. Does that, does that make sense? I want to eat the light. I want to eat the light from the lightning bug, because I don't want to eat the gook. I don't want to eat the slime, but I want to, like, eat the light.
I feel that's either buttery, like popcorn again, or, again, like, sweet, like a lemon drop.
Oh, see, when I feel like the light would taste kind of weird and cold. Like, I think it would be, like, less taste and more texture. It would be, like,
I don't
eating,
like snacks that are cold. I'm a very anti-cold snack person. I don't even like ice cream as a snack.
But I think there's a difference between cold and too cold. Like minty, but also temperature-wise.
You know I hate mint, though.
Do you really?
I don't love mints. I mean, I'll put it in my fucking mouth, especially when I have to brush my teeth. But I always avoid mint flavors.
When I say minty, there's like a feeling that comes along with mint. The taste is not what I'm interested in, but the feeling is what I'm talking about. Like, there's taste of the Szechuan peppercorns, right? There's like an earthy, kind of bitter, peppery taste. But there's also the tingle you get in your mouth from the Szechuan peppercorns. I feel similarly about this light from lightning bugs. It would be like cold and minty feeling in your mouth. It wouldn't taste minty, but it would feel minty and cold. Or when you first come outside and you like take a drag off a cigarette, it's like, ooh, so cold. Also, I forgot, number one, 100% on my list all the time for snacks in a movie theater would be a cigarette. That's what I want when I'm in a movie theater, is to be able to smoke a cigarette. Just saying. That's top of my list.
That's not a snack. Maybe you mean eating your cigarette?
No, I mean smoking it. And a cigarette is a snack.
That's not a snack. That's not a snack.
Because it makes you less hungry. It makes you less hungry, therefore it is a snack.
So does cocaine. No one calls cocaine a snack.
Okay, well then cocaine is a snack. And we're defining a snack as something that makes you less hungry.
What about some things that make you less hungry sometimes, but makes you more hungry sometimes?
Like what?
Is time a snack? Sometimes it makes you hungry, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, the last two things we brought to the snack table were the light from lightning bugs and music. So I think we're playing pretty fast and loose with what is and is not a snack at this point.
Okay, sorry, you're right. My apologies. Are you actually anti insects for food?
I mean, I feel like I would have to get over some stuff. I'm not against it. I just know I would have to do some working to get to being able to eat insects. I'm pro insect eating, actually.
For me, worms are a little harder than the sort of fried locusts or fried scorpions that people do when they like burn forests and just try to get all the burnt things and eat them. Because the burnt ones that are fried crisps, what?
Nothing. I can't imagine that's what people do. They probably do, right? But I just suddenly had this image of someone like lighting a forest on fire and then quickly grabbing all the burning things. I'm like, that doesn't sound.
No. They light the forest on fire, and then when the forest is finished, there's a bunch of dead insects inside the burnt up forest, and then it's like fucking party time. They bring the whole crew and they all go in and grab them.
Did you do research on this?
I don't need to do research to know a basic fact. I don't do research on 1 + 1 = 2, man.
You should.
Or veins equals arteries. I don't need to know veins and arteries are the same thing with research.
Or that fat cells grow and shrink, but you don't get more of them.
You can get more fat cells. You just can't lose fat cells. And I was right about that. I know what I'm talking about. Worms are actually a lot of times more boiled and steamed, so they're more juicy. Though I feel those are way harder to eat.
Yeah, see, that sounds pretty foul to me.
But the other ones, they taste like chips, especially if you put salt on them.
I think I would just have to get past it. That's where I would be. It's not an intellectual thing. It is wholly an emotional thing.
Like, sprinkle it on mashed potatoes, your favorite fucking food.
Oh my god, mashed potatoes covered in locusts. The idea makes me shiver. That's fucking foul. I just got goosebumps.
Should shivers be a new snack? I know I didn't do 3, but I don't want to do 3.
So we're only going to do 2, because Walter sucks.
Well, you did 3, just so you know. Actually, you kind of did 4.
I did 4, because, yeah, so I did 1 for you. So the what snacks we bring to the movie theater are smoking a cigarette, when a nun has an orgasm and thinks they're talking to God, gumbo, what was the other one? Gumbo.
The light bulb in the light litter box bug.
The light from a light bug.
Shivers.
My cat Lola.
Shivers.
Shivers and music. So those are what you can eat at a movie theater. This movie was awesome. I really liked this. I have a lot to talk about with this freaking movie, which was Megan.
I mean, I found the movie really fun, even though some of the themes were on the nose.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, that's different than I have a lot to talk about.
I do also have a lot to talk about. I'm just glad we feel the same way that, like, this movie is a little bit on the nose, but man, was it fun to watch. But I think it's time for... Do you hear those bells?
Ka-chick, I'm being a doll, robot doll, ka-chick, 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 robot dance, ka-ching-ching,
that's right, everyone, it's time for Suede Best's movie plot thingy that we do, because I feel like everyone needs to know it. Basically, this lady's who's, like, super into her career and making robots and making toys for kids, her sister and husband die, and so she has to take in their daughter, Katie, her niece, and she's bad at being a parent, and so she has been working on this project with this toy called Megan, which is like a super smart robot doll, and she makes the little girl best friends with Megan, and then the doll gains sentience and is super protective of Katie, the doll is, and then, you know, evil robot shenanigans ensue. To me, there are like two sort of central questions that the movie's asking. One is like the boring one that I find less interesting, and I think movies do this a lot, is like the phone bad theme.
I don't think that is what it's saying at all.
I think that's one of the things that's pushing. Technology is dangerous if left unchecked by humanity and human emotions and human feelings, which is like, yeah, obviously, that's every object. A rock is dangerous if no one decides not to hit someone in the head with it. I think it's like kind of a boring question to ask. I think that's just so fucking dumb. The question I'm more interested in is like, what is a parent and what is love? Do you know the term uncanny valley?
No.
So it's a term in design where there's like a bell curve. When you're talking about something that looks human, there reaches a point where it looks just human enough to be human, but not human enough to obviously be a human, and it becomes creepy. It's a difference between the cat humans in Sleepwalkers and Hello Kitty. Hello Kitty is so devoid of human features because she's just like dots and a nose that she's adorable. But you slide that all the way to the other end of Sleepwalkers and you've got this like weird, gross cat human. People talk about this a lot in robots. I think the uncanny valley is kind of like a central tool in making these kind of killer doll horror movies. Chucky, for instance, is super adorable, but also just human enough to look creepy when it starts doing fucked up shit. And normally in the uncanny valley, the robot emulates humanity, but can't do it very well. And so it's creepy because of how off it is at being a human. But Megan is the opposite. Megan is so goddamn human. Even though she's got this uncanny valley face, she is one of the most human characters in the goddamn movie. And she's also the only character who really gives a shit about Katie versus her aunt, who doesn't know how to be a parent, doesn't know how to take care of Katie, can't connect with her. She takes her niece, who's grieving because of the loss of her mother, and uses her as a tool to better her career, to show off how great the doll is to the investors, to be like, this is the new great toy, because that's what Megan's gonna be. She like parades Katie around with this doll, and it's like totally fucked. Megan is a little terrible because she murders people, but at least she cares about Katie, right?
I think that's a little black and white. I do think the film is on the nose, but I don't think the aunt does not care about Katie.
She does by the end.
No, I think it's more that the aunt is also grieving and trying to figure out how to connect with someone they believe they should connect with, but they're so scared of fucking up because it's not one of her toys that she can easily control, and she only knows how to do it by treating her as a toy. I don't think it's like, oh, I am annoyed about this hindrance and nuisance.
I think you're right a little bit. I think one of the flaws in this movie is that doesn't come across enough. Because of how nail on the head everything is, we don't really see the aunt grieve enough to quite get that across. I think the director and the writer came in with one with one direction, and then the movie came with another. That's how I feel about this movie, which is why I liked it. I like movies that are like weird and uneven like
this. Yeah, because when the thing you're crafting takes over from your attentions, there are things in the world that exist where the artist comes out with a very particular intention, and the project becomes something completely different than their intention, and they lose control of it. Usually it's bad, but the one time you make the accident and it becomes good, it's fucking amazing. That is why one of my favorite movies of all time is Anna, 1975 Italian documentary, where this guy tries to film counterculture. And in doing this, he adopts a girl who he believes is a symbol of counterculture. But instead, the girl looking like a symbol of counterculture in the end, the girl just completely flips out on them. And they're like, holy shit, we ruined this girl's life by trying to make her the focus of her counterculture movie. So the film kind of becomes this weird accident where we're sorry about counterculture, and fucking up this woman's life, and we don't know what to do with this movie, so we just released it, and now you just watch us fuck up.
I think central to enjoying certain kind of horror movies is that lack of success in seeing the project to fruition, right? There are movies that are so bad they're good. That's a central element of the horror movie oeuvre. And I think that's very similar. And what I like about Megan is that the so bad they're good parts have to do less with the way the movie is and more with the way the project was envisioned. What I like about this is that it's not a great movie in that it kind of has a muddled message about what it's trying to say and it ends up feeling like something weird, but the rest of the movie elements are super fucking solid. So you have this movie that's like, I'm not sure they knew what they were fucking doing, but it looks good and it feels good to watch and the plot is consistent. It's not like watching The Room where like it's just goofy, fun to watch, but it's also fun to take the piss out of. This is like a movie that you watch and you're like, what the fuck is going on? My kitty cat. Oh, she's here. Hi, Orange. Why aren't you talking to the microphone? Are you mad? Oh, yeah, she's mad. She's mad. Are you mad? Oh, she bit me. Not hard. Just enough to be like, leave me alone. I'll never let you eat her, Walter. I would fucking shoot you in the goddamn face. I would shoot you with my Megan sword. It is totally awesome when Megan does her Megan shit. And it's so freaky, but never in like a nightmarish way. Megan is weird, but she never feels scary. She's just like, what the fuck is going on, is how she looks. She's a little like Bjork, actually, in Dancer in the Dark. She's just like weird when she's on screen. She's like, what the fuck is going on? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Bjork acts like a child. And Megan is a child in this film, too.
She says that. She says that at the end. She says, you're just gonna, like, fucking throw me away, Gemma. You just gave me this super smart brain and let me figure it out on my own. I'm not gonna let you treat Katie the way you treated me. And Megan is confronting her mother in the final scenes.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not completely on board where... Maybe this film is, like, technology bad. But in a way, it's also like, well, if you just raise Megan like a normal child, then it wouldn't be that bad?
See, I guess my only issue with that is there's very little where like Megan needs to be raised. The one element where Megan needs to be raised is when she acts about death and Gemma's like, it's too complicated, don't worry about it, which is like probably not the way you should have conversations with death with your children, right? I mean, like, there are books, there are movies, there are writers, there are philosophers, there are psychologists who like all have different opinions as to the way you interact with death with a child, but you still have to do it. You can't just be like, it's fine, don't worry about it.
I would argue when Gemma, the aunt, was alone and only working on Megan, she was using Megan as like, hey, Megan, here are the things I care about, like Jane Austen or whatever the fuck the book
she says Jane
about.
Austen and Janis Joplin.
Okay, so their relationship there, you could say, oh, they were friends. I don't think it was friends because Megan was an empty mind. So there was a sort of parental figure in that relationship. And it changes when the aunt is, Megan, you have to turn off. You're doing something wrong. Stop. You know, like when an innocent kid asks why, mom, and by the sixth whys, he's probably getting spanked. I don't know. Is that a good way to raise children? I'm not really sure.
I think that there's some like ideas of children picking up what their parents are saying, because Gemma hates the neighbor's dog and it ends up attacking both Megan and Katie. Gemma says that dog should be put down. Isn't there a way to put that dog down? And then that's just fucking Megan just does it. Like, she's mirroring her parent. Yeah, I think you're right. I think I latched onto phone bad because there are a few more times that I was like, oh my god, I get it. Technology is spooky. Because there's a part where, like, Megan is basically acting as the parental figure for Katie. One of the people who's helping make Megan, one of Gemma's co-workers, is like, don't you think it's bad that your child is being raised by Megan? And it's like, that's the same thing people say about the iPad generation. So I was like, oh my god, I get it. I get it. I get it. Technology is spooky.
The one you're talking about is the therapist, right?
No, the first person to say it is her co-worker, her female co-worker. Then the therapist says it. There are two times.
I'm not against what you're saying, but I feel like none of the people who say, oh, technology bad, ever show a better parental figure.
No, that's true. They're just like, you should be better at it.
Yeah, and the aunt never like becomes them, right? Like, the aunt isn't like, oh, you're right, let me do what you guys are talking about. So that's why I feel like there is still a distance from this, ooh, technology bad. And in the end, who wins? It's fucking Katie finding the robot to defeat Megan.
But importantly, it's not just that she has a robot that defeats Megan. She, a person, uses the technology to defeat the robot. It is not technology versus technology. It's technology versus human using technology, reinforcing the idea that technology can't go unchecked. Fair. I don't think that's Fair. The only theme of this movie. I think you're right. I think there are some weird parent questions.
And also Megan as the bad child and Katie as the child that's raised right. I think Megan being a parent and a child at the same time is of interesting dichotomy in itself.
But I think that's something that's true, right? Having spent time with my extended family, I see issues between, or I saw issues between my mom's side of the family, her and her brothers and her mother, that were not arguments between people, but arguments between parent and child, while she was still my mother. Those issues don't go away just because you become an adult. I mean, because like in this line we're creating, Gemma is basically the grandma.
There are elder siblings out there who end up taking a motherly role because the mother is, that was super sexist. There are oldest siblings out there where the parents are fuck-ups or dead, and therefore the oldest sibling becomes a parental figure. And that's not a grandparent-parent-child relationship,
no,
right?
Actually, I think your thing makes more sense, the elder sibling having to pick up the slack for the parent, because Megan is closer in age, sort of visually and emotionally. I don't know. See, that's what I'm saying. That's like what's weird about this movie. It's like very solidly put together. It's like a good-ass movie. There's just like a lot of weird swirling stuff on the inside. So you've got something that like is like a piece of cake, but then you eat the cake and you're like, are these cranberries and also bacon bits and also like cream cheese? Got a whole bunch of different stuff and you're eating and like, but it still looks good and tastes good. You're just like, what are these fucking flavors?
Dude, that's so funny that we both were like, this movie is so on the nose, and then we didn't like pick up each
other's totally
different
fucking things. Yeah. Totally different things. Megan is getting ready to murder people because she's like, I need to take care of Katie. And I started thinking, is that fair? Like, would you murder someone to protect your child? And then I'm like, how is this fucking movie, this stupid ass fucking bananas movie, making me tackle one of these like very old and complicated questions, which is like, is it okay to murder someone to protect another, right? Like, when is it appropriate to take a life? And meanwhile, it's this fucking murder doll movie. How dare you make me think this, Megan? How dare you make me have these questions? Because dude, the fucking doll sings Katy Perry songs. Fucking like, she sings, what is that song? Titanium? Is that what it's called? I am titanium.
But not in a clubbing da, way. Da, da, da. Wait, super off topic. Have you ever been clubbing before?
No.
That's what I thought.
But I've been to the, like, redneck equivalent where you have people, like, fucking, it's like a cover band playing like Lynyrd Skynyrd, and there are like a bunch of people dancing and drinking beer. But I've never been to like the club where it's like and people are like grinding up next to each other and sweating.
That's not actually clubbing either, to be honest.
Is that not what clubbing is?
No, it is. That's a certain type of clubbing. Maybe this is just Asian clubbing, but there is a clubbing experience where it just plays Katy Perry songs and Titanium. I think the dance to Titanium is so fucking funny.
Is it dance to Titanium?
No, okay, so it's not a real dance. That's why it's super funny. It like plays all these fucking
like TikTok
songs.
By Kesha.
Yeah, TikTok by Kesha, and then everyone doing their own dance or like TikTok.
Or Miley Cyrus. What's that?
Smile at
that,
you.
I was thinking that one.
Six
that's
colors.
Like, American boy, we're gonna have a great summer. You know what I'm talking about?
American Pie by Madonna. Anyways, there are not many synchronized dances in these clubs, but the one that gets a lot of people is, I'm sure it would make sense to you, Low by Flo Rida, where it goes low, 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 low.
You get lower on the dance floor.
Everyone likes to get low, but that one's like kind of energetic. Everyone's getting lower on the dance floor. It's like using your muscles.
Can you give me a quiz of what the dance for Titanium is really quick?
Okay. What is the dance for Titanium?
No, you have to give me options. You have to give me options.
Okay.
I love these bits because they're always unhinged, because you're like, well, and then you say the actual dance and then it's going to be something normal. And then you're like, and the other one is when you spread your butt cheeks open and close with your hands for 15 minutes while everyone watches. And I'm like, what's that one? Is
okay,
the fake
okay,
one.
Okay. A. It's already unhinged. My fucking A is already unhinged. People take their chest out and expose themselves in the front.
Okay, so not that one. Obviously not that one.
People just stare at each other and point to the sky. And three, people looking at each other and just gaze lovingly.
Oh, all three sound really stupid. One is wrong because we would hear about trends of people getting kicked out of club for titanium. I feel like it's the gazing. Is it the gazing?
It's actually more two.
Oh, it's people pointing at the sky.
And the thing is, it's always these songs are super energetic, right? It's like boom, 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 boom. And then titanium comes on. Everyone looks at each other and they do this exact same slow dance of like just pointing to the sky of titanium.
Do you have any Katy Perry songs you like? Because I have two.
I don't think Titanium is actually a Katy Perry song, just so you know. Yeah, it's by David Guetta.
It's by David Guetta featuring Sia. How am I supposed to know? All these fucking women sound the same.
Don't worry. I always thought Titanium was by Rihanna.
Oh, you know, Rihanna, the mystic horse rider from the sea. Do you want to try that again?
Rihanna?
Rihanna is...
Rihanna?
I'm pretty sure it's Rihanna, bro. I'm pretty sure it's Rihanna.
All right, name me a fucking Chinese pop singer right now.
That guy who goes, Super Idol.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. I see him on YouTube all the time. What about that guy who died on stage?
Beyond's lead singer?
Yeah, that cuckolded Hong Kong and China. What do you mean cuckolded? Not the boy band Central.
Oh, you're talking about my theory.
Yeah.
Okay, my theory is that if the guy did not die on that freak accident in Tokyo, K-pop would be nothing. It would be nothing. It would just be Beyond.
It would be C-pop.
No, because Beyond is not really a pop band. It's more of a rock band. But we would have dominated. BTS, fuck BTS. It would have been Beyond. Everyone
hey,
would
now,
be
there are a lot
Beyond.
Of BTS fans out there. We love BTS. It stands for Big Time
Look,
Song.
I have nothing against BTS. I'm just saying, if it wasn't for the death of the Beyond lead singer, Beyond would be the gods.
What is your favorite Katy Perry song?
Okay, my favorite Katy Perry song is...
You
I
listen
don't
to
really
a lot
know.
More pop...
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, it's just... I thought you were a pop music lover.
Most of the pop I consume is through albums, but Katy Perry is such a single marketed artist, and I'm just bad at engaging with singles. For example, if you asked me what E.T. sounds like, I kind of forget.
Fireworks is a hilarious song, but every once in a while if I'm feeling very sad and I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, that's right, I am a firework. It like gets me every once in a while. I'm like, I'm a firework too, Katy Perry, hell yeah. But I love the music video for that video too, because it's like so tone deaf. It's just like people getting shit on and then they like stop getting shit on and they become fireworks. It's just like so stupid. The other one is, what is that song, TGIF is what it's called. Oh, Last Friday Night, I think is pretty funny. It's on the tables. I could not sing either of them for you. I don't know how they go. I just remember enjoying them.
Well, there's not a single Katy Perry song I dislike.
I get annoyed when she sings these songs that are supposed to be like power ballads. Like Dark Horse. I'm like, fuck off, Katy Perry. Don't make the music like that. Like, give me something silly and poppy.
I don't remember what Dark Horse is like.
I just remember listening to it and being annoyed. Like, you know that Chandelier song by Sia? That's like a pop song that's like got some oomph behind it, right?
I don't think I know that song.
I fucking... You know that song, Beat It by Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
Fucking good.
I know Janet Jackson's Control. That's a pretty fun album.
Remember when Janet Jackson's boob got exposed on TV?
No, dude, I don't. Why do you ask me so much American culture things thinking I would know them?
It was the Super Bowl, Walt.
I didn't even care about the Super Bowl until like last year when I went back to Hong Kong and missed America so much. I decided to try to watch the NFL.
It's the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Wait, you know? What the fuck?
My dad likes football. Like, I usually know who's playing in the Super Bowl. We always watch it. I just like don't really care.
Your dad makes you watch the Super Bowl?
He doesn't make me watch it. It's like a family thing. We all get together and watch it. He puts it on. I like come in and out and I'm like, who's winning, Pops? And like, you know, it's like a family thing.
Does he watch every game on Sunday?
No, but he does tend to watch football when it's on.
How come I've never seen him watch football?
I don't think you've been in the US when football games have been going on.
Oh, fuck, you're right, because I'm always there at summertime. Summer loving, have me a blast.
Summer loving happened so fast. Now you have to go. I met
pretty
a boy.
Voice, cute as can be.
I met a girl. She's Asian.
Summer days. Summer days. Drifting away. Sha-la-la to the mother.
Give me KG.
Life.
And watch Buffy the Vampire.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-hoof.
who this podcast is going to be unlistenable to anyone but us. I think one of the like central things about this podcast, one of the funny things about this podcast is Walter is often frustrated with it because of how much he's had to edit it. But I, who have not had to do any editing, get so much joy from listening to it. Literally no one could listen to this podcast except you and me. And I would be so happy because I still get to listen to it.
The truth is I have to be more aware about a lot of things because I'm always thinking about the editing. I am making this bit longer than it needs to be because in my head, I'm thinking, okay, we're gonna edit this when Suede references Megan's talking about singing Titanium, and then I'm just gonna finish the edit after we finish dicking around with pop songs. That's gonna be a good section, but it has to be longer than 5 minutes. So let's keep talking about random pop songs for a bit. I'm milking this to make sure this is a legitimate fucking bit right now.
You're milking the bit. You're making the sausage get made.
Yeah, but I think I milked hard enough that you were like, what the fuck is going on with this bit?
Yeah, I was. Dude, I was like,
I'm still trying to milk this bit to be a little longer, by the way, so you can try to move it back into the same topic, but we're still going to be talking about Titanium.
What song would you want Megan to sing to you as you fell asleep?
See, the thing with Megan, she sings all her songs like lullabies, right? And I think it's hilarious because Titanium is not a fucking lullaby song.
No, it's a power ballad.
So personally, I think Take No Prisoners by Megadeth would be a great lullaby song by my great, beautiful Megan.
My beautiful.
What about Megan? You?
The Last Unicorn, the title song for that movie.
What about Broken Sides Freaks?
Oh, no.
All right, let's try to sing. What is the chorus again?
Dude, I never listened to Broken Side. All I remember is like that Broken Side sucks. What did they even call that? Was that like Screamo, Screamcore?
Crunkcore?
Oh, that's right. It was Crunkcore. Dude, fucking the 2000s is awesome. So Let's Go Brandon.
No.
Dude, it's like an alt-right thing where like people were shouting like fuck you Biden or something, or like fuck off Biden, and everyone thought they were chanting Let's Go Brandon. So now you see all these bumper stickers that say Let's Go Brandon and you're like, oh, so you're like a shithead. I want to talk about Brandon. Gemma is trying to find like a school for Katie, and Katie's like, fuck you, I don't need to go to school, Megan will teach me everything. And she's like, no, you need to go learn how to socialize. And she makes her go to this like outdoorsy hippie school, and this kid Brandon shows up, and he's like a lot bigger than the other kids. And the mom's like, well, yeah, like he's just growing a lot, you know, he's changed a lot. And she goes, honey, are you cold? Do you need a jacket? And Brandon just looks at her and goes, fuck you, Debbie. It's so good. I was so ready for Brandon to be my favorite character. And then he just becomes like a little kid sociopath, and I was like less invested. Because like, how cool is it when you see a kid tell their parent to fuck off and say their first name, not their name like mom or dad? How funny is that shit?
Sure, but like, don't you expect them to be a sociopath afterwards?
Nah, they could just be a giant edgelord.
Okay.
But that scene in particular, this kid is fucking mean to, like, hurts her, making her hold on to like a spiny thing, and then takes Megan, takes off some of her clothes and straddles her to get ready to like beat her around. It's basically like simulated rape is like what they're going for in that scene, right? And Megan is like, you know what happens to boys like you when they grow up? They become bad men, so I'm gonna kill you. So again, like instead of it being this like silly little like, oh, the robot killed her scene, it's like, would Brendan have grown up to be someone who abuses women? And if so, is Megan like in the right? Like it's a weird scene. And it's because the people who get murdered, with the exception of the boss, I don't see a point in him getting murdered. There were moments where people get killed in this film where Megan kills people, and it's like, well, should she have? It's like weird that the movie wants me to ask that question.
It sounds like the question you're fascinated by is killing justified?
See, that's why this movie is wild to me, is like it's making us have these conversations even though it's just a stupid doll murder movie. Because like, while Brandon is in fact culpable for his actions, if he had someone show him right from wrong, as you're supposed to do with children, the reason that children learn toxic behavior is not something innate in them necessarily. Sometimes it is like you have a shitty role model. Cycles repeat, and people who abuse others are not always just abusers because they're bad people, but instead because society lets them be bad people. And they still need to be held as culpable for their violence, but you can tackle the systemic issues to cut down on the people who are raised into thinking that these actions are okay. It's like way too complicated to be like, was what Megan doing okay for philosophically, right? That's like a way too fucking complicated question. But the movie makes you wonder it, which is crazy because it's a killer doll movie. Because there's a point where Gemma's like, you can't kill people, Megan. And Megan's like, why not? Humans do it all the time to make their life easier. Why can't I do it to make my life easier? And I'm like, really? You're going to like throw that in the mix? This movie should be way stupider than it actually is, I think, is what's going on, which is why I like it.
I think this killing thing is interesting. I'm just trying to like think about what I want to respond to it, because I don't think I never been that fascinated with that question. Oh, actually, here's what I would say. I actually don't feel like that question is that rare. And I think in a lot of like stupid things we watch, that question is brought up. I understand that you're saying, oh, this movie should be more stupid. What do you think? It's not like this question is more smart, because it's the same fucking question in all these stupid movies. So what do you think it is about this that makes this question more interesting in this film than all these other dumb movies that ask this question all the time too?
I think it's the way you ask it. Like, I think that Brandon scene is a pivotal moment. If you were going to take the actions Brandon is doing and put it on an adult scale, I mean, that's heinous. Even not just in an adult scale. Children do that to each other. That shit happens. Children molest and assault other children. It's like bad. But because all of it goes understated, this movie would have sucked. Like, all right, I'm going to get like a little blue, a little real, just letting people know. But like, so if this movie, if he like takes the doll and then like starts pulling off her clothes and being like, let me see your tits. And then like the doll like comes and murders her. That would be like way too on the nose, because it's like, well, yeah, obviously. But this is like much weirder. This is like something that understands what children are doing. There's implied fucked up stuff happening, but there's no explicit fucked up stuff happening. This is a kid who's mirroring fucked up actions, not doing a fucked up action. Because nothing is ever dated and it's all just implied. When a rape revenge film is like, oh man, is it really okay for her to kill the guy who raped her and left her on the street? It's like, yeah, obviously it's okay. That's what the movie wants me to think. And it's made it very clear that it's okay. Yes. But like, this movie is like weird and understated in exactly what's happening. You can like feel the vibes, but nothing has been explicitly stated. So it's like weird when it happens. And it makes you wonder like, is that okay what she just did?
I think the other layer of that, is it okay to kill someone to get justice, is one question. But then this other question of, is it okay to kill someone because that's correct parenting? I guess that's like more of the rare question. Question mark?
I don't know if it's the rare question, because like, isn't that what happened in Mother, that movie we talked about for our Mother's Day episode? I think it was a Korean movie.
Yeah, that is what happens in that film.
If you like, so for instance, when Megan and Katie get attacked by the dog, Gemma says she wished she could put the dog down. She says to the police, is there a way to get that dog put down? But it never happens. Pragmatically, if a dog bites a child and would continue to bite a child and can get across the yard, it would make sense to kill the dog to keep your child safe. Especially if you're like under the idea that animals are not as good as people. Like, no one goes to jail for hitting a dog with their car, but people do go to jail for hitting people with their
car. That's why I have no issues with eating Lola.
Well, I mean, I don't have issues with eating animals. I just like Lola. I would also be upset if you tried to eat my little brother.
That's why I have no issues with eating Rocky.
Dude, Rocky would kick your ass. It would be so funny. I don't even need to worry about
Rocky. Oh my god. That has literally nothing to do with eating something. Anything, literally anything I eat can kick my ass. A fucking piece of celery can kick my fucking ass. It doesn't stop me from eating celery.
I could punch a cow. I could punch a cow into the sun. I would punch a cow and it would
give up. Okay, that's great for you. I'm just saying, like, you just dragged it into fighting when it didn't have to be about fighting. It was literally just about eating.
Everything's about fighting. I bet I could eat you and not fight you. I bet I could eat you before you eat me. I 100% bet I could.
Okay, I don't give a shit. You can eat me. Go.
No, it's a contest now.
I don't know. Okay, I lose. Wow, congratulations. Oh, my God.
It's so frustrating that you won't fight with me. It is so frustrating that you will not be combative with me. You fucking dude, when we used to live together and I would like wrestle with you, you would just like lie there and I would always be so frustrated that you would like wrestle back. You'd just like, ugh. And I'm like, come on, no, let's wrestle. It's made me so mad.
Yeah, because like your brain is too dumb.
But no, I think that Brandon scene is really pivotal in like making this movie smarter than it is.
I am struggling a little bit about why this scene is so unique and special. It's almost like you're saying it's smart because it could have been rape, but it wasn't.
I think it, no, first of all, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I think this gets the violence children do to each other right. Is that a lot of times kids are violent and cruel to each other. It is not the thing they do as adults, but is a simulation of what they see adults do. Brandon does not sexually assault Megan, but he does hit her. He does take power over her. He does see her as an object. And Megan is like this representation of motherliness and femininity in a lot of ways. He's mirroring these violences that men do against women as an adult turn into things like Me Too kind of stuff. Like, that's why I think this scene is smart. It shows what this child could become if left unchecked, and then gives the answer that is like, hey, we don't need to raise these kids to be better. We can just murder them. Which I think a lot of people, I have found out about some things people have done to other people and have felt like I would like to hurt them. And I don't, because we live in a society where that's not allowed, but I've been very angry. But I think it's extra smart because it's not that he's already done the thing, it's that he's going to do the thing. And because Megan is so good at figuring out what's going to happen next, she does it.
I can find that question interesting. Can humans be cold and farm for peace? You know, actually, this reminds me of the film Gattaca with Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, where there is a perfect society that is built for people with good genes. And it's good for everyone except the main character, whose genes are bad, which is the only reason why you see that film as a dystopia rather than a utopia. So even in that film, the answer is sort of yes, because for everyone else, the society is peaceful. But I guess Megan pushes it even more and makes it even personal, because now it's not saying, is it good for society, which is something you just imagine. Now it's asking, do you think it's good for you as a fucking parent if you want to protect your kid?
But I don't think it's just that she's a parent. I think this is like kind of got elements of a feminist film. Again, I don't think it's perfect because Megan turns out to be a monster, which I feel weird saying. I don't know if feminist is the right word, but empowerment of female figures through traditionally male avenues, which are violence. I think when you talk about mothers murdering people for their sons or their daughters, normally it's like, how far does the woman go before she snaps and breaks? And Megan never snaps and breaks. Megan's like, oh, I see a problem and I fix it, which is like very different than like the woman pushed to the edge, the mother pushed to the edge.
I mean, personally, I think some of those movies are empowering. I don't know, maybe that's just me though.
They might be, but I feel like this is empowering
in a way.
I feel like it is a different character,
because it's not out of desperation. She's actually really in control and doing some kind of rational thinking.
No, this is out of pragmatism.
Because for me, the on the nose bit is actually not even what we're talking about right now. I think the on the nose bit, it's there are two types of parenting. One, you allow your child to make mistakes, and one you don't. Which one is better?
Well, I have some more parenting stuff if you want to talk about it. So there's this dude named Harry Harlow. He was a psychologist and a researcher and a scientist in like the 50s. And people don't like this dude because a lot of his research involved torturing monkeys. But he was focused in child development, because you can't experiment on kids. He would take these macaques, I think they were, or like capuchin monkeys or something, as soon as they're born, takes them away from the mother and like raises them without a mother. First of all, these monkeys became super neurotic as they became adults without a mother. They were like not functioning like the monkeys who were raised by their mothers, and they also had a harder time doing monkey shit. And so he starts developing this thing called attachment theory. 20 minutes into this movie, I'm like, oh yeah, this reminds me of Harlow. And then like 10 minutes later, they start talking about this. When the therapist starts talking about attachment theory, first of all, which means I'm a fucking genius, but also there's this thing that Harlow did trying to figure out about surrogate mothers and stuff like that. He would take the baby monkeys from their mothers, then he would put them in a box with a toy mother they'd made, and one of the toy mothers would be like soft and made of cloth, and the other would just be made of wire. What he discovered is even if you had the cloth mother not deliver food, like even if you had the food delivery system through the wire mother, the monkey would cling to the cloth mother, even though the wire mother was the one giving it sustenance. And so there's this idea of physical comfort and closeness being integral to the development of a child's identity, needing to be near a mother. The reason I bring this up, Megan seems like the perfect mother. Gemma seems like the bad mother. Even though all Megan is the terrible metal doll mother wrapped in soft skin. So it's like taking this like Jack Harlow idea of like attachment theory and like what is the better mother? What is better for a child's development? This like cold, uncalculating thing versus like this emotional, soft thing. What happens if that calculating thing becomes soft? It's like asking you this super bizarre question. I don't know. I think that's, again, has to do with simulation. Megan is the simulated mother, and she's better than Gemma is in a lot of ways. Just for the record, this has a lot of universals. For instance, I think we can take gender out of this, because it's not like he gave the dolls boobs. There was just like soft thing that the monkey can be near, hard thing that the monkey can be near. He says mother, but really it's parent, I guess. And I don't know, you add in complicated stuff, breast milk and stuff like that, and like what that does, because there's like brain chemistry there. There are a lot of universals and a lot of complicated stuff getting thrown around. But at its base point, there's like this weird question about the soft real mother versus the simulated metal mother, and what happens when you make the simulated metal mother better. And I think this goes back a little bit to Phone Bad. So many people talk about kids being raised by screens, right? Even Gemma's like, I don't care how long you use your iPad, just go for it, versus her actual loving parents who are like, she can only use the iPad for a little bit. In a lot of ways, the iPad that the child is sort of being quote-unquote raised by is Harlow's new metal mother. But this metal mother is so good at simulating the nice things that it doesn't matter. But what you're going to actually have is weirder children. Children who are less equipped, right? Katie isn't developing social skills. She's only hanging out with Megan. She's not developing as, quote unquote, a normal child is.
I think the body stuff is very interesting. I really do. I'm still unconvinced, though, that the film really makes Megan the better mother.
So what are the problems with Megan as a mother for Katie?
So when I said what's the on-the-nose thing, maybe someone like my mom.
Dude, we've been talking about moms a lot. Guess what? I love my mom.
Okay, I love my mom too.
Yay! We love you, Mama Sang.
It's super culturally different and it's fucking racist.
That's right. I'm a racist piece of shit because I want you to love your mother.
Okay, as I said, the on the nose thing, right? What I think is the big difference of Megan and Gemma is that Megan represents this motherhood idea that I'm not going to allow you to make any mistakes, while Gemma represents this idea that I'm going to allow you to make a lot of mistakes. And that is the difference.
Well, okay, but so is the problem that she murders people? Does that make you an unfit mother if you murder people for your children?
No. The problem, because I'm fucking Western cocked, the Western ideals imperialize me. So sometimes I get into this system where I think Western ideals are better than Asian ideals. And one of the big Asian values, the understanding is you don't allow your child to make mistakes. In relationship to this weird, great American ideal that we all come to know and love, is that, oh, let your child drop and fall and then the child will pick himself back up, and that's how your child grows. And that's why Megan is bad and Gemma's good.
Because she refuses to let her child fall. But so the murder stuff doesn't really filter into that, huh, to you?
The murder stuff is bad, of course, but the murder stuff is like...
But like, why is it bad?
Okay, in my opinion, the thing is Gemma can murder too.
But she doesn't.
Yeah, so that's why the murder thing isn't so big of a deal to me. I just viewed it as like a... It's more of a craft tool for me that was used to create that toxic environment of overprotection. Like, I feel it as an accessory. Like, it's their necessary.
Yeah. Her murder is an accessory. Yeah,
oh, this is my parenting technique. Anti-murder. Instead of the murder is inherent in their parenting.
Let's pull back a little bit. How would this feel? Two parents, two kids. They're the exact same. We have clones. And it's like two alternate realities. One parent gets a bunch of Mighty Beans and plays this weird falling game with their kids. And the other gives them an iPad, which is like better for parenting.
Is it weird if I genuinely don't think there's a huge difference?
I think it's weird, but I wanted you to say that. Why do you think it's the same?
Because
thing?
I also do believe role models is almost more important than
the way play happens. I sort of agree with you.
The other thing is you can give a kid an iPad and still spend time with them.
That's true, but so much of child's development, play is linked with growth. There's this concept where kids are learning to play with each other called parallel play. I did this a lot as a child, actually, which I think maybe says something about me. Kids who will have friends that they will play with, but they will play beside each other, not with each other. Like, they'll build their own separate things in Legos while they're being friends. And as the child develops, they learn how to meld those two together. But that's like an early step if we're talking about normalcies. And you know what? Okay, so here's what I'm going to say. A lot of times we like to tiptoe eggshell-wise around like what is and isn't normal. I don't think there's anything necessarily normal or unnormal about how to raise a child or how to socialize another human being. I do think it's fucked up to just give your kid an iPad. That's like, I don't think how you should be raising a child. Because so many people want it to be like, oh, well, my child has this or my child has that. So I just give them the iPad because it calms them down. And it's like, you can give them the iPad and like still interact with them.
That's
right?
Actually really what I'm saying. There's so many stories about today where your husband is addicted to CSGO and you're so worried what happens when the fucking child comes out. And you find out, oh shit, the husband loves playing CSGO with the child. That's how they're bonding.
Yes, exactly. That's the central difference between giving your kid an iPad and interacting with your child.
That's the thing. I'm frustrated with the question because I don't think the question is really asking what I think is the difference. Is it fucked up if I give my child a bunch of Mighty Beans and then don't interact with them? Or is it fucked up I give my child a bunch of Mighty Beans and I do interact with them? Then yes, my answer to that is, I believe if you interact with the kid, if you give a bunch of Mighty Beans, that is better than not interacting. It's the fact that you suddenly want to put iPad into it. I feel like there's a desire to blame the technology over the lack of interaction or how you understand interaction.
I guess the difference is that iPad can emulate connections in a lot of ways. We talk about VTubers sometimes and this idea of a parasocial relationship. And so iPad can simulate human interaction. Mighty Beans are not as good.
But that's the thing. They're not as good now. We're talking about Megan, right? Isn't there this huge stereotype of dolls? That's why the creepy doll stereotype exists. It doesn't have to be a technological creepy doll.
Well, but I think that's what Megan is asking, is what happens when the object, technological or otherwise, replaces the human? I think the word technology versus magic, when you're talking about these doll murder movies, are basically a stand-in for what happens when a semi-sentient object replaces you. What happens when the dump truck can move without itself? What happens when the dishwasher, maybe it's magic, maybe it's machines. The still question is, a object is replacing.
But that's why I'm unconvinced Megan actually cares about this technology question. People always want to blame technology for the bad parenting. But the bad parenting is not because of technology. It is you misusing technology as a tool. And if you're so concerned about parents being replaced, you don't need to look into the sci-fi future to find it. What about orphans who live in houses for orphans and they never had a parent? What about domestic helpers in Asia? To me, the technology question is almost there to make you think it's about technology and then be like, nah, it isn't. And if you thought it was about technology, you might actually be part of the problem.
What happens if the object replaces the mother?
Yeah. Okay, this is not for any research. This is me being a fucking Joe Rogan spouting fucking theories with no fucking evidence, okay? But for me, I think something sort of drives the kid into believing this object has to be my mother because I'm not getting any mother stuff from something else. Or someone doesn't explain to them what's the difference between that and a mother relationship.
Well, and I think, so for instance, one of the issues with Jack, with Harry, I was about to say Jack Harlow, but I think one of the flaws in the experiment from a philosophical perspective is that you're putting a lot of ideas onto the monkey. You are saying, this monkey views this object as the mother figure. That's making a lot of assumptions. But I think what you can say from looking at these experiments, children require physical attachment to some sort of figure as they develop in order to be socialized. And different things will happen depending on how that child is socialized. There are some obvious ones. Bigots raise bigots is the idea. But the question that we've not been able to answer yet, because there's not a machine that can do this yet, is what happens when a machine can simulate motherdom and raises a child. I think this movie chickens out a tad because it makes Megan turn into a monster at the end. I was a little frustrated at the end when Megan's like, you ungrateful little bitch, you hurt me. Because Katie uses the robot toy to defeat her. I would have liked it more if the entire time Megan was like, I know what's right for you. I'm still going to be your mother. Now I have to punish you. She suddenly stops being her mother. I wanted Megan to continue being the mother. And then you get into sort of feminist questions of when does a mother stop being a mother? Just because someone gives birth to a child and has to raise them is their entire identity. Then this movie, which is, I guess, is why it's not perfect, is that I think sometimes it's not sure what question it's asking. Is it talking about motherhood? Is it talking about women and women identity stuff? Is it talking about technology? It's messy, but I like messy.
You just said that attachment theory shows that kids need physical attraction. Then why are we so fucking paranoid about iPads? iPads don't look like humans, so we'll never think of them as parents. Are you telling me that kids inherently feel like their fingers touching a screen is the most physical attraction of all time?
No. Harlow's experiments prove otherwise. The iPad is sterile. It's not
so
soft.
Why do you think that giving the iPad to the kid is worse?
Well, because you pointed out something that I set up an unfair experiment. It probably would be relatively negligible. I think there might be body stuff that kids learn when they play with toys and stuff like that. Maybe how to move their bodies or whatever. But you would get development with a child if you were playing a two-player game. When you're playing video games with someone, if you're a lot better than them, sometimes you're oh, I'm beating them way too often. You go easier on them just because you want it to be fun for them or whatever. There are etiquette and social rules skills you can learn through playing a video game. I will say that I think there is this narrative of parents just throwing their kids an iPad to play with them. I don't know if that's worse than giving your kid an action figure. I think some people would say that, like, the lack of imagination is probably bad, which I think I would agree with. Like, I don't think your brain is doing
much.
I mean,
come on, let's be fucking fair. Imagination didn't help you when you fucking snarled at all the girls that tried to talk to you on the playground.
That's true, but that has nothing... Yeah, but on the other hand, if I just spent all day, like, watching screens all day as a child and, like, not doing things on my own, I wouldn't be able to, like, make the things that I like to make. I wouldn't be able to write. I wouldn't have flexed those muscles.
You would be more like me, who's, like, super cool on the internet and super pretentious.
Okay, so first of all, when you were born, God and the devil had an arm wrestling match, and neither of them won, and a force far greater, far stranger, and far, far more inhuman than either of those figures won this wrestling match and dug its way into your skull.
I know
created
it was
you.
4chan.
No. You've not been raised by 4chan, but there was something deeply, deeply inhuman inside you. I don't know what it is, but it is there. It's just this thing I can see in your eyes. Listeners, fake film fans, our little degens, I wish you could look inside Walter and see the madness that's, like, roiling behind his lids. And not everyone notices it because
I got the squinty eyes. I knew what the fuck
he's
you're
got
gonna
squinty
say
eyes because he's got, you can't see as much of his eyes, so you can't see that madness, but I've looked deep. There's something else in there. I think you're something new. I think if this was like a battle manga, you would be like the figure who's totally inhuman. You're the like murder god from Majin Tentai Neuro Noragami. You guys should read Majin Tentai Neuro Noragami. Don't watch it. I mean, if you like anime, watch it, but I don't think the animation is nearly as good as the art in the manga.
So we went through a lot about why I'm hesitant or struggling to engage with the way you view Megan as bad. Shall we ask it back to me? So as I said, I think on the nose is one parent thinks one makes more mistakes and one parent doesn't allow person to make more mistakes. Is that question not so interesting to you?
I didn't pick that up. That was not where my mind went when I was watching this film. I want to start off by saying that no parent can keep their child from making mistakes. So that understanding of parental rearing is a fallacy. Conversely, I disagree with the idea of letting your child make mistakes and then having to pick themselves back up. So for instance, you know, letting your child not do his homework and then getting in trouble, you can do that once and it's fine. But there comes a point where he's like, oh, so I get in trouble at school, but nothing actually happens. I don't think raising a human being is as simple as one parenting style. I think it has to be constantly in flux. It has to constantly be renegotiating. And those are the problems with both Megan and Gemma. Gemma assumes she can pawn the child off to this thing and then poke her head in every once in a while when she needs to be a parent. Megan, on the other hand, thinks that she's so perfect that she will never let her child make a mistake by raising the child perfectly. Neither are going to work, because sometimes you do need to let your child make mistakes. But if that mistake is getting hooked on opioids, you need to not let your child do that.
By leaving your goddamn opioids in the fucking bathroom, parents, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, right? So my mom didn't baby me whenever I was hungover. My mom has no time for anyone when they're hungover. She thinks it's a failing on their part, which is maybe true, I don't know.
She's nice to me when I'm hungover.
Yeah, but that's because you're just always hungover. Well, so you remember when I'd be like bad hungover, I'd be like in the bed puking. On the other hand, there was a time that I was at a friend's house and my dad found out who, and I was not supposed to be hanging out with this person because they did a lot of hard drugs, and he came and picked me up and he was like, you're not supposed to be over there, it's a problem, but on the other hand, I'm glad I came and picked you up. I think if you're not consistently engaging with how
the moment is,
yeah, the moments, so there's a little bit of like letting the baby fall, but you can't let the baby fall into the acid.
Well, let's make it clear too that Megan isn't representation of allowing your child to make mistakes and then cleaning up after. Megan literally prevents the mistakes from happening by killing everything before it comes. So that is also like a very different mentality. And there is a stereotypical Asian mom or dad who does that.
In my mind, keeping mistakes from happening to your child is going to keep them in your family unit for a really long time, keeping you the matriarch or the patriarch.
Like Dogtooth.
Like... I fucking love that movie. No, so like, I think if you have a societal system in place where you're going to keep taking care of this person and making sure the mistakes don't happen, then that's fine. But in a Western landscape, that doesn't function because there is an assumption that the child will eventually move out and be its own being. And so you do have to let the child learn how to deal with mistakes. And I did that as an adult. I mean, there are some things that I'm not great at, but I once at age 16 shit myself in the middle of a boardwalk in New Jersey and managed to make it all the way home without freaking out using fucking ninja skills. My dad calls it suburban survival. You learn how to like fucking deal with shit as they come. I'll tell that story about when I shit my pants in Ocean City one day because it's wild.
But I think the greatest part about the story is that Suede was on a roll of telling the story for a while because it was a great way for him to make friends. But the thing is, he could only do this story when he was drunk. So once Sweet was drunk enough and he started this story, it kind of always felt like chaos time would just be good.
Oh, yeah. It was either that, talking about my granddad, or us singing that was like, oh, shit's about to get wild. I guess we have some quick shout outs, of course, as always. Maddie, who's been on the episode, is always interacting with us on Twitter, and we love Maddie. We'll have her back on soon, maybe for Encino Man. I was talking to her, that could be fun,
especially with Maddie, because then it won't just be about how you loved Encino Man and then really it's about sunflowers because you think sunflowers and cavemen are the same thing, and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on?
What does that have to do with anything? What is that? What are you pulling that from?
Christmas!
I hate you so much.
Shout out to Maddie. I loved replying to your tweet, though. Maybe we should get IVs together.
We have another message. This is from a close friend. We're not gonna say their name. You want to read what they said, Walt?
Yeah,
because sure. It meant a lot to us.
And I told them this, but I really want to like stress this. Our friend said, hey guys, just wanted to say thanks for continuing to make the podcast. I am having a shitty couple days, and this shit brings me so much joy, especially the part where Walter wants to spend an entire episode talking about vomit. See, everyone loves the vomit.
Oh my God. All right, you know what? We'll do a vomit episode. We'll do a goddamn vomit episode. A whole episode about vomit. How about that, Walt? Why don't we just vomit on each other on the podcast?
Kind of hot. I'll take it. Kind of like my transitions. I want to like make this really clear though to the person who sent this to us and to anyone. I legit woke up that day with so little motivation to edit the podcast, and I read that and like my fucking energy was on the fucking maximum. It was like stronger than fucking caffeine. I don't know what the fuck happened. It made me really happy, and everyone's comments does make me happy, but this one just hit at a really good time. So keep sending us comments like this. I would be fucking turgid with energy, man. Like fucking steroids, Jack. I don't even need to go to the gym anymore.
Do you think if someone sent you a comment like this every day, we would do weekly episodes?
Yeah.
Okay, you heard it here, folks. If you heard it, you heard it here, folks. You want weekly episodes to come back? I would be so down for weekly episodes because I don't have to do the editing.
The real reason I don't want to do weekly episodes is because I wish you would use that extra time that you don't have from recording anymore to do some back end work, but it seems like you struggle with that. But no, literally everyone's comments, whenever they send it to us, it always makes me super happy, because sometimes when we don't get these comments, I feel like I'm just editing to avoid. Suede has better control of his self-reward system, but my self-reward system sometimes is on a fucking crazy time, so I can't access it properly.
And apparently me being like, I love the podcast, isn't enough for Walter.
Oh my God, I fucking forgot why I started that opener like
why,
that.
Why,
the
why?
Real thing was, I wanted to be like, hello, welcome to Fake Film Fans, I'm Suede Best. We're the most famous podcast of all time right now, because that's what you fucking told me. You think we're so fucking famous right now because you think we have 6 million listeners. That's what I have an issue with. That's just fucking false. I don't see how you can think that.
I live in a fantasy world. I want to quickly shout out Gray Matter on Spotify, spelled GRAYMATTR. So check out his music. He makes pretty awesome electronic music. And he's also got way more plays than we do. So maybe he can like help us listen. Please share the episode. We would like to be famous. If we get enough likes, we could do this once a week because we could hire someone to edit it for us. And if you get us famous, we'll inevitably be canceled for something we've said on the podcast, which will be very funny for everyone but us. So
yeah, I love that. That's funny.
Yeah, share the episode, tweet it, share it to your friends.
Raise some Christmas trees.
Write a letter to Santa. Oh my God, you're going to kill. This is.
You said I wouldn't be able to kill it for you.
You're not going to be able to kill it to me because I'm going to be so hyped this coming Christmas.
All right. Well, I'm hyped this coming Christmas already. I'm so fucking hyped.
Except my Christmas was like not great this year. My Christmas had looming cancer brain surgery. That was like, it was like not a great Christmas. Do you think it's weird how much I talk about my dad's brain cancer on the podcast? Do you think it's like weird? Do you think it throws people off?
No, I don't think it throws people off. I also don't think it's weird because you do love talking about what's going on in your life.
That's true. I'm open like that.
You do notice that I don't do it.
It's because all you do is play Dota, right? No, that's not true. Walter has a lot going on in his life.
You know actually what's going on in my life? Okay, promise me you will end the podcast no matter what I say if I tell you what's going on in my life right this instance.
Oh, God. Okay, I promise.
Okay, you can't do anything else.
I promise.
It is officially an hour and 30 minutes into my birthday. Go, end the fucking podcast.
I feel like such a jerk. If you're gonna watch a movie, if you're gonna watch a movie, happy podcast to do it with the lights off.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Walter. I'm such a bad friend. Oh my God.